Good afternoon. This meeting of the Senate Resources Committee will come to order at 3:31 p.m. in the Butcherovich Room 205. Today is Friday, March 13th. Members present today are Senator Kawasaki, Senator Coghill, Senator Rivak, Senator Keel, and myself, Senator Machicki. Let the record reflect we have a quorum to conduct business, and please silence your cell phones. On our agenda today, we have SJR 15, State Full Share of Profits in ANWR, Senate Bill 184, Extend Fishery Resource Landing Tax Credit. We've been joined by Senator Giesel. Under bills previously scheduled, we'll also take up Senate Bill 130, Seafood Product Development Tax Credits, and Senate Bill 232, Personal Use Fishing Permit Fees. At the request of Senator Wilikowski, SJR 15 will not be taken up today. And we will take up our next bill, and that's Senate Bill 184, sponsored by Senator Olson. Here to present the bill, we have the sponsor and his staff, Denise Licoli. You'll correct me when you come up. So please come up, join us, put yourself on the record, and tell us about Senate Bill 184.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman, for allowing us the opportunity to go ahead and present this bill, and also to the distinguished members of the committee. What SB 184 does essentially is extending the date for the CDQs to go ahead and continue on with their the function that they do, which is very essential to many of the communities that are out in the coastal part of Alaska. It's actually a tax credit that's being used to go ahead and provide this. And with that, I'll have Denise Licioli, who's my chief of staff, to go ahead and explain the bill to you.
Good afternoon, and thank you again for hearing the bill. My name is Denise Licioli, and I'm staff to Senator Olson. I hesitate to say this, but I'm going to, I guess, go into dangerous territory and say this is a very simple bill. It's basically one line that extends the tax credit for the CBQ program, Fisheries Landing Tax Program, by another 10 years. It's scheduled currently to sunset December 31st of this year. The bill, if it passes, would extend that sunset to December 31st, 2030. There have been not really two audits, but the Legislative Finance produces the indirect cost report every other year. And the last report, which was in 2019, they recommended continuation of the program, saw no problems with it. And likewise, in the revenue source book, they also give some information about the program and also recommend continuation. Just for the edification of the committee, the holders of CDQ, I'm not sure if I'm saying that correctly, are allowed to get a tax credit if they've made expenses for certain programs. Many of them are educational, and there are experts who can testify and tell you more specifically what all of those are. And then when they get the tax credit, it is split against the state share and the municipal share. And so this particular credit comes against the municipal share of the tax that they would owe. And so this is a net zero to the state, whether we extend it or not. But many of the CDQ groups want you to extend it because they get benefit of that tax credit. And the municipalities, we haven't heard from any municipalities opposing the tax, which is where the share for the tax credit comes from. We should have Brendan Spanos online, and he can tell you more about the program itself. If you'd like more details, and I believe there should be two people online who could answer programs about the program, if you had program rather than tax questions.
There are online. We have Brandon Spanos, Deputy Director, Tax Division, Department of Revenue, Joseph Cassie, Division Community and Regional Affairs, and Lorelei Ivanoff, Norton Sound Economic Development Corporation. So do we have any questions for the senator or staff before we move to the others? Thank you for bringing this forward. We'll, and you're welcome to stay there online, I believe. Or do we have anyone in the room? No. Okay, yeah, they're online, so feel free to stay if you'd like. Mr. Spanos, do you have, I see questions, but can you help us with this bill a little bit on how the revenue is directed, how it's used, and then we'll go to the other two for the same questions.
Yes, Chairman Chickey, for the record, Brandon Spanos, Deputy Director with the Department of Revenue Tax Division. The credit is as was explained earlier, it's on the 50% share that goes to the municipalities. So most of the fisheries taxes have a 50% share, whether it be the business tax, which is the processing tax, or the landing tax. In this case, the credit is for the landing tax. Munis generally get 50% of the tax that we collect. So depending on the credit can either come out of the state side or the muni side. This particular credit comes out of the muni side, which makes a lot of sense. The nonprofits that were organized are organized by the villages on the west in western Alaska and the Aleutians, and therefore the money really is going back to those entities that were formed by those villages. So it's similar to a municipal share, but it's in the form of a tax credit. So the those that are eligible for the CDQ, which I can explain a little bit. I'm not an expert in the CDQ program. I'm sure someone else can do a better job than me. But the program, it's a federal program. It was established in 1992. It provides a 10% of the Bering Sea and Aleutian Island fisheries to the villages that that were formed into these six CDQ nonprofit corporations in Alaska. And the six entities, they contract with other businesses to fish for those CDQs, and some of the boats fishing for the CDQs develop subsidiaries, so there are six CDQ entities, and they're eligible, or I should say that the CDQs were established to provide eligible Western Alaskan villages with the opportunity to participate in and invest in fisheries in the Bering Sea and the Aleutian Islands management area. And when they file a tax, or excuse me, a form claiming the credit, it's approved by the tax division, which is a little bit different than most of our credits. Most of our credits, tax credits, are filed with the tax return and claimed on the tax return. This one is filed before the tax return. And it basically, there's seven categories that that fishermen can identify their contributions being used for. It's scholarships, seafood industry training, transportation facility grants, transportation facility loans, facilities grants, facilities loans, and research grants. And those are all identified on the form. We approve it, and then those donations can be credited against their tax, up to 45.5% of the tax claimed on the tax return.
Thank you, Mr. Spanos. Any questions? Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A question maybe for Mr. Casey, maybe Mr. Spanos knows. The communities where this, these fish products are landed, the list of those folks who, those municipalities affected by the credit, does anybody have that?
Mr. Spanos.
So through the chair, I do have a list. I'd have to say on my screen it's very small. I can find it if you give me a little bit of time, but perhaps someone else has it right in front of them.
Mr. Cassie from CNRA, do you happen to have that at your fingertips just to make efficient use of the committee's time?
Through the chair, I do not have one. When I was asking for this information from the person in our department who does this, they said they'd have to go through 112 communities line by line to see who's actually being impacted by these credits. But so I apologize for that.
Perhaps Ms. Ivanoff might be able to help a little bit.
I couldn't provide any information here.
Okay. If someone can please send us that information, we're going to hear this bill today anyway, and we'll open public testimony, see if anyone's available for that, and then we'll have a follow-up meeting where we can share that information and see the will of the committee at that point.
Certainly, Mr. Chairman. We'll get that information for you.
Thank you. Other questions? Mr. Cassie, and I hope I'm saying your name the right way. Do you have any information you'd like to for testimony?
I'm mostly here for questions. We don't have any official comment on the bill.
Okay. And Ms. Ivanoff?
Yeah, I mean, we're definitely in support of this extending the sunset date, and we provided a letter expressing our support of extending that sunset. We have given sizable contributions to NACTEC, which is a vocational education program. They provide opportunity for students in the Bering Strait School District and Nome Public Schools, and it's been an important resource for that center.
Senator Geisel has a question.
Only for you, Mr. Chairman. Who does Ms. Ivanoff represent? I didn't hear the introduction.
The Norton Sound Economic Development Corporation. I did at the beginning.
Okay, thank you.
Yes, I covered all three that were online. So one question for whomever is most comfortable answering. This came about in 2014. Was the first date from 2014 to 2020? Or was there another sunset date somewhere in between there?
Mr. Chairman, if I could go ahead and answer the question Senator Geisel had to start off with. NSEDC, which is the Norton Sound Economic Development Corporation, is the CDQ that's assigned to the area between essentially Wales and until the next CDQ starts down on the delta of the Yukon River. As far as the date, unless Ms. Ivanoff has more pertinent information, the CDQs were formed and by the federal delegation that was out there and then put into effect, and I think that this is the first extension that I've been aware of and have been dealing with for the CDQs that are there, which are obviously, I mean, Ms. Ivanoff talked about some of the beneficial programs that are out there. But I can also tell you that from a municipal standpoint, since I live in one of the communities that benefits greatly from it, it certainly makes it gives more opportunities to the youth, especially that are there, to go ahead and try and be involved in the ability to get more education, more even jobs that are out there, so that they can continue on to live in that area.
Thank you, Senator. I asked the question because it looks like if it went from 14 to 20, it was 6 years, and this extension is requesting a 10-year extension. Do you have, is there a reason for the 10-year versus 6?
Mr. Chairman, I do not know that answer, but I'd be happy to find out and get back to the committee.
Thank you. Other questions?
Chairman?
Yes, Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was actually going to ask that question from the other direction. I think Ledge Finance's indirect expenditure report on these sorts of things suggested that we could consider eliminating the sunset date. I was going to ask why you only extended it 10 years.
Well, we'd like to have that same question answered as well, but realizing that we, at least here in the legislature, like to see sunset dates because of this is such a – things can change, things can happen. We're dealing with a large fisheries that is in the Bering Sea there. And so because of that, I feel more comfortable if we do continue to have a sunset date so that it can be under review and that we can go ahead and see, you know, is it actually benefiting the public, which this is, I don't know of anybody in the region, at least where our CDQ is at, that has any opposition to having the CDQ in place.
And Mr. Chairman, if I could add to that, one thing that I have recently learned is that part of the reason for keeping a sunset is on behalf of the municipalities, since this particular tax credit goes against their share. So out of respect for their money, because it's neutral to the state one way or the other.
Thank you. Other questions? Okay, I am going to open public testimony on Senate Bill 184, which we will bring back. Is there anyone in the room that would like to testify on Senate Bill 184? And I don't see anyone online. Committee, I want to, we will put this bill aside for now. I want to thank you, Senator, and your staff for presenting the bill. Folks can send any written testimony on this bill to the committee email at sres@akleg.gov. and we'll hold public testimony open and set the spill aside. Thank you.
Thank you.
Next up, we have Senate Bill 130 by Senator Gary Stevens. The senator and his staff, Senator's staff is here, Tim Lankin, to present the bill. Please join us and identify your record, yourself for the record, and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Tim Lankin, staff to Senator Stevens. You guys are a little bit ahead of schedule. We weren't expecting to be up quite so early. Senators do hear imminently through that doorway. But in the meantime, I can proceed for us. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for hearing this bill. Before you, Senate Bill 30, version M, is truly a direct economic development policy that has been used for the state for some time. It's intended to support the long-term development of Alaska's value-added seafood processing industry, specifically targeting both salmon and herring fisheries, as it's worded in the bill currently. The incentive has historically been in the form of a tax credit applied to processors of those two fisheries who invest in their infrastructure and research and development to find ways to improve existing or discover new technologies in adding value to salmon and herring products. This bill would extend the existing sunset on that tax credit, and it also would broaden the scope of the tax credit to also include pollock and cod. This means literally growing our market demand for the quality of and Alaskan byproducts in salmon and herring rendered from those products in addition to pollock and cod. We want to thank you for considering this bill. As we move forward with it, I'd like to point out in the record, first of all, we have a letter of support that we received today from the UFA, the United Fishermen of Alaska, as well as some consideration on a potential amendments to the bill that would include other fisheries such as perch, flounders, and others. It might even beg the question at some point if we want to consider applying these types of tax credits incentives to find value-added tech for all of our seafood in Alaska, but that, of course, is another conversation. That is my introductory comments for you, Mr. Chairman. I'm happy to answer questions or go into the sectional at this time.
Thank you, Mr. Lampkin. Any questions for Mr. Lampkin before he completes a sectional? Seeing none, please proceed with sectional.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Before you should be version M of the bill. Section 1 relates to, as summarily, this bill is a conforming language. First of all, extending the sunset for the existing sunset on salmon and herring, and it would then now add these other fisheries of pollock and cod. So that you're going to find that pretty much this bill is a conforming language bill for those additional fisheries. So Section 1 relates to existing tax credits applied to value-added activity for processing salmon and herring, and so number one, it would add the fisheries of pollock and cod as applicable for that tax credit, and two, would extend the sunset of that applicable tax credit through year 2025. Section 2, again, is a conforming amendment relating to applying that tax credit for investment equipment used to process salmon and herring to be available tax credit for that equipment that's invested in for pollock and cod. Section 3, conforming amendment, relates to the a three-year carry-forward of unused tax credits for the processing of salmon and herring, and that same carry-forward would be available to those folks that are investing and have a potential carry-forward for tax credits applicable for the pollock and cod fisheries. Section 4 relates to the cap on the tax liability of processors of 50% of their total liability being used as a tax credit. This is a legal drafting cleanup, duplicating redundant, what I've been informed are existing duplicative and redundant clauses elsewhere in statute that are contained in Section 1. I hope that makes sense. Section 5 is a conforming amendment relating to and instances of when assets have been invested in and tax credits have been applied toward them in these fisheries, if or when that those assets may be disposed of or sold or may not entirely have been processed in the state, this allows for the state to claw back those tax credits in those instances. Section 6 is a conforming amendment relating to the definition of what is a qualified investment, and it proceeds to describe those things in detail as they apply toward the salmon herring fisheries, and this, again, conformingly would allow them to be applied toward pollock and cod products. Section 7, again, a conforming amendment relating to the definition of value-added products. And the definition thereof allows for the inclusion of pollock and cod byproducts. Sections 8 through 11, Mr. Chairman, in a conversation with our legal department, salmon and herring product development tax credit's been extended and amended many times over the years, and it's frankly left a bit of a complicated web of session laws and delayed repeals and contingency languages and so forth accordingly. And so this bill reflects, in these sections, 8 through 11, represent a cleanup of that history by repealing all the prior session laws and repealers and such contingency languages and replace them with a single repeal that's embodied by Section 8. And then finally, Section 12 is an effective date of the bill, sunsetting the measure January 1st of 2021. That concludes the sectional analysis, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Lampkin. Any questions for Mr. Lampkin? Senator Kawasaki.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, or through the chair, is there any sort of proof or some sort of metric that this tax credit actually does what it was intended to do, and that's to have these processors actually invest in the state and invest in value added for those fisheries?
Through the chair, Senator Kawasaki, I would refer you to a narrative in the fiscal note that will touch on some of that. Should be fairly descriptive of some of the economic activity in that regard, but otherwise, I can't speak on behalf of the industry. I would like to defer specifics on that matter to the industry themselves.
Okay. Other questions this time?
Mr. Chairman. If I could respond, well, you guys are really fast.
Senator Stevens.
Yeah, you're moving along very quickly, but I appreciate the question, and it was extremely successful. We passed it, I think it was like in 2002 or 3, affecting salmon and herring. It was extremely successful. It really helped the salmon industry, saved us at a time that we were facing a lot of competition from out of state with the fisheries industry, and really, really, really saved us the time. It did good things, and I really believe that this will help the pollock and cod fishery as much as it did the salmon and herring before.
Okay. We also have online for this bill Brandon Spanos again from the Tax Division, Department of Revenue, and Chris Barrows. Once I open public testimony. Mr. Spanos, do you have any comments? Before you start, I just have one question on how the timing works, that there's not a fiscal note for FY21 when the split of the sunset seems to split that fiscal year.
So, Chair Michicki, I'm just trying to find in the bill the effective date. I suspect that's why there's a zero on that particular year.
Well, the effective date is January 1 of 21.
And so the tax year is the tax return is filed in the year following the catch, and so we wouldn't see a reduction as a result of the credit until the following year.
And just a little follow up there, Mr. Spanos, I assume that there won't be an interruption in this credit because of the previous date, sunset date.
Chair Michicki, that's correct. The prior year's sunsetting, if it were to allow to sunset, they could still claim the credit in fiscal year 21.
Thank you. Questions? Mr. Spanos, did you have anything else you wanted to share on Senate Bill 130?
Chairman Chickey, we have a fiscal note. It's a pretty short write-up. It basically just has the cost, or rather the reduction through this indirect expenditure estimated through fiscal years 22 through 26. And it is an estimate because we aren't 100% sure how much would be invested in equipment for the new species, pollock and cod, but it does take into account historic credit amounts for salmon and herring, as well as an estimate for the new development as well.
So Mr. Spanos, I noticed that it graduates from 3.6 up through FY26 at 6.6. What's your methodology for assuming that increase in investment?
So we assume that it would take some time for the development. Once the credit is in statute, it's unlikely that the industry would be this is an assumption that the industry would be ready to spend the money immediately, and so we did ramp it up. Our estimate is a range. It's between $3.6 million to $6.6 million, and we just assume that that the more would be spent in later years. Given the historic rates, they do fluctuate, and so anything in between that 3.6 to 6.6 is possible in any of the years.
Thank you. Other questions? Senator Stevens, we had a bill cancellation, so I apologize for moving a little quicker than you're used to, perhaps. Do you have some statements you'd like to make?
I appreciate your dealing with this. Senator Stevens, Kodiak, I appreciate you doing this. So we can find my notes here that Tim, I believe, went over everything that I had to say, but basically just to realize, Mr. Chairman, that we had an earlier policy that we passed many years ago. It was very effective in helping the salmon and herring industry to move ahead. This is an extension of that, of those laws, but also would apply, in this case, to pollock as well as cod. So I think our industry was enormously impacted on the salmon industry when we were doing lots of things. We had, of course, some funds, federal funds that helped us, but we were able to do a lot of things to help fishermen put in new engines. We helped processors put new lines in, and it just made an enormous difference in the industry. And I'm hoping that if this passes, it will have a similar impact on pollock and cod as well as salmon and herring. So I appreciate your considering this. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator. I know for a fact, being a fisherman in the industry for many years, that we essentially went from H&G to value-added and some very nice ready-to-eat products. That was a result of this investment, and it was not only a substantial increase on the work that happens in-state, but it brought more value to the ex-vessel price for fishermen as well. So. And to talk about that, perhaps, I'm going to open public testimony. And right now online we have Chris Barrows with Pacific Seafood Processors Association. Mr. Barrows, can you identify yourself for the record and provide your testimony, please?
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. I hope and members of the Senate Resource Committee, hope everyone can hear me okay. My name is Chris Barrows, for the record, and I am the president of the Pacific Seafood Processors Association, and I'm speaking to you today in support of Senate Bill 130. Our understanding is that the Senate Bill 130 would help provide Alaska seafood processors with the ability to continue to receive some capital cost recovery in exchange for investing in new equipment that produces value-added products within Alaska, and incentivizes getting more value out of each fish, which in turn provides greater benefit to the state of Alaska, to coastal communities, fishermen, and processors. Expanding the list of tax credit eligible species to include Alaska pollock and Pacific cod is important, as Alaska pollock and Pacific cod comprise about 69% of Alaska's statewide harvest by volume, at least with 2018 numbers. And getting more value long-term from these high-value species is a benefit to all fishery participants, including the state of Alaska. So a little bit about the PSPA. Pacific Seafood Processors is comprised of 8 major seafood companies that purchase fish from harvesters from Ketchikan to Unalaska to St. Paul, and then in turn produce value-added products and provide the markets for these Alaska fisheries in a global context. These companies operate 25 facilities in 15 coastal communities across Alaska and 3 floating processors that serve remote locations. Seafood processors have used the existing salmon tax credit to make some critical investments in processing technologies for salmon that would otherwise be cost prohibitive for some prom processors. And it has changed the face of salmon processing to an increase in fillet and other value-added salmon products that have a strong U.S. market. A higher value product means a higher return on investment for the state and all participants, and including fish taxes, which are based on fish value. Part of the sustainability effort in Alaska is to increase and improve the utilization of each fish, which in turn generates more value out of the state's resources. And there's no better way to increase the value of Alaska's resources to increase this utilization of fish that have already been harvested. So some other examples and great gains that have been made in this context include using milt, roe, stomachs, bellies, fish oil, bones, and skins to generate new products and new consumers of Alaska seafood. So reauthorizing the value-added tax credit and including cod and pollock in that reauthorization will help Alaska producers continue this progress and expand more fully into these other species. So I appreciate the opportunity to testify in front of you today, and I'm available to answer any additional questions.
Questions for Mr. Barrows? Seeing none, thank you for being here on the line today, Mr. Barrows. Next, we have 2 individuals in the room that want to testify on Senate Bill 130. First, Mr. McCune.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Jerry McCune. I represent Cordova District Fishermen United. I was here when we passed the first bill, which in those days we were just putting fish out frozen. And farm fish had the market flooded. So that's how we got our fillet machines going, that people, I didn't realize that, and developing a new product takes millions of dollars. It takes people testing it, you gotta get the shelf space. It's very costly. But you can't go buy forklifts and stuff like that. So it really does cut it down to where you're gonna do something new or put something new on the market. So it will help out the industry and get some added value out of that. And so then we added other species in now, which is probably a good thing too. You know, cod and pollock could probably look at different things if they had this tax credit. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. McCune. Questions? Seeing none. Francis Leach with United Fishermen of Alaska.
Good afternoon, Chair Michicki and members of the Senate Resource Committee. My name is Frances Leach, and I am the Executive Director for United Fishermen of Alaska. We represent 36 commercial fishing organizations, ranging from gooey duck divers in southern southeast Alaska to Bering Sea crabbers, and just about everything else in between. United Fishermen of Alaska supports SB 130, the Seafood Product Development Tax Credit Bill, and we'd like to thank Senator Stevens for introducing this bill. This bill will provide Alaska's seafood processors with the ability to receive capital cost recovery, which in turn they can invest in new equipment that will produce value-added products. New and innovative products will in turn benefit the state of Alaska, processors, fishermen, and coastal communities. This is a win-win for everyone. The seafood tax development tax was developed when salmon prices were extremely low and has helped the processing sector to upgrade infrastructure and develop new products outside of canned salmon. The tax was extended to herring during a time of low prices, and shrinking marketplaces again helped to bring innovative product development. UFA appreciates extending the tax credit to benefit pollock and cod during a downturn in this industry. The seafood development tax credit is helpful to processors, and as it has shown in the past, through innovative and updated equipment, to increase the raw fish tax paid into the state of Alaska. Fish taxes are based on fish value, and the more money that we can get for those fish, the more money for the state of Alaska. Thank you for this opportunity to testify.
Thank you, Ms. Leach. Any questions? Seeing none, thank you. I'm going to leave public testimony open. Do we have any other questions for the sponsor before we set him and his staff free? Seeing none, we are going to set this bill aside. There are some questions about potential amendments. If you have any amendments on this bill and Senate Bill 184, please let us know. We plan to move these bills along, and but I will work with the sponsor on some of these suggestions that they're aware of as well. So thank you. Next up, we have Senate Bill 232, Personal Use Fishing Permit Fees. This bill is by request, and to introduce it is my staff, Conrad Jackson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Conrad Jackson, staff to Senator Machicki. The bill before you today, Senate Bill 232, is aimed at addressing impacts that face Cook Inlet communities where we have local dip net fisheries prosecuted. I direct members to just thumb to the back of their packet and take a look at some of the pictures, and you'll see very clearly what some of those impacts are. Those impacts include burdens on local services and infrastructure, the handling of excess fish waste and litter, and unfortunately some disregard for local residents and property owners near the fisheries. Beaches near the mouth of the rivers are often treated, sadly, as trash receptacles, sometimes with very little regard to the local communities. An example of this, prime example again, is shown in those pictures, which are taken at the mouth of the Kenai River. And the fishery has become at times quite a burden for the city of Kenai. The senator is quite familiar with that, as the city of Kenai is in his district. The influx does bring some revenue. However, the city of Kenai, prior to instituting a small fee to access the beach and to camp down there, was forced to shoulder the burden entirely on their own. No state dollars were expended to assist. SB 232 institutes a $5 fee for the dip net, a personal use fishing permit. The fees collected would be split, as currently drafted, between communities where personal use fisheries take place, with the remainder staying in the general fund to provide state-provided services to assist in fisheries that are outside municipalities. Many might ask, why are we paying a $5 fee? Why would we be asked to pay a $5 fee for Alaska's resource for fish? It's not really to pay for the fish. It's to cover some of the infrastructure, the support services for those communities, those municipalities, where the fishery takes place. We have another fishery in the state, the Chitna fishery. I believe everyone is familiar with that, where a $15 permit fee was instituted a few years back. Coincidentally, that fee was put in place for almost identical reasons. They needed some help cleaning up some of the mess that resulted from the fishery. As you've gone through the bill, you've noticed that the $5 fee would apply to all personal use fishing permits in the state. That current form is intended to be changed to more focus on strictly the Cook Inlet personal use fisheries. The amendment has not been drafted at this time, but that is the ultimate intent of the bill, to focus on Cook Inlet dip net fisheries.
Thank you, Mr. Jackson. Any questions for Mr. Jackson? Senator Kawasaki.
Thank you. You just mentioned that this would be applied to every personal use fishery, but that there might be an amendment to limit this just to the Cook Inlet fishery. Is that correct?
Yes. Senator Kawasaki, through the chair. Yes, as currently written, this would apply to all personal use fisheries, including the Chitna, and that was never the intention.
And then, Mr. Chairman, so I guess if it is, if it will be limited, then the question is probably moot. But the question was going to be, how would you allocate the amount of the $5 fee to different fisheries if it's going to be spread out throughout the other 50 fisheries? And again, if it's just going to be limited to just one fishery, then that, I guess, the question is moot at that point.
Senator Kawasaki, I understand your question, and yes, that the intention will be, ultimately the form of the bill will be just for the Cook Inlet personal use fisheries.
Yes, sir.
So, again, this more applies to if it were Chitna. I used to talk to the folks that live in AEC, that's at the mouth of the river, Copper River. So after fishing season would end, they would complain about the amount of waste that was shoved all the way down to AEC, 50 miles downriver. You can see the waste in Chitna for sure, and there's definitely some usage issues there. But would they also be covered, or would they also be able to get some sort of support for cleanup, even though they're not necessarily in the affected area where people actually fish?
Senator Kawasaki, through the chair, since we're not, we wouldn't be focused on the Chitna. Chitna would be totally excluded. I don't know that I could answer that. For the fisheries that are in Cook Inlet, those fisheries are very near the mouth of the river. There's no other municipality or no other location that would be affected by downstream, flushing of the debris.
Okay. Great. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Certainly. If I can clarify a little bit the intent of this bill, although it's not written this way currently, we wanted to introduce it and then bring you a CS or revised version, if you will, that clarifies that it was always intended to be for Cook Inlet, and essentially you're looking at two river systems that are affected. For the city of Kenai, it's to offset their costs for expensive management, and you will hear from the city manager in just a few moments. For the Kasilof River, it would be for not only some services, but for infrastructure, which does not currently exist. So the view is it's not a lot of money, but it would help us some restrooms, some maintenance for boat ramps, and cleanup of that area as well. Any other questions? Yes, Senator.
The $5 is fine with me, and it looks like from the pictures you have quite a volume. So does anybody have a head count of what that volume might be during a fish dip meeting?
Senator Coghill, through the chair, I would think that the city manager of Kenai would have very accurate numbers. They do a dip net report with all of the infrastructure impacts every year following the fishery.
So I'm going to open public testimony, and we only have one online right now, and that is Mr. Ostrander, who happens to be the city manager for the city of Kenai. Mr. Ostrander?
Thank you, Chair Michiki. I appreciate the opportunity to speak to you today. Everyone can hear me all right?
Yes.
So as Conrad stated, the city of Kenai has been supporting this fishery actually since 1996. And just to clarify, the pictures that he's referring to, which I don't have in front of me, but I assume they're the pictures that we provided earlier, those pictures were taken back in probably 2010 or 2011 before the city really started actively managing the fish waste on the beaches. And what we've done since that time is actually purchase tractors with rakes. And at low tide, we rake the fish waste down to the the water so that the beaches remain clean. So we've really increased our management and increased the services that we provided down there. And we're very proud of the experience that we provide for the dip net fishermen that come down and participate. And we do have extensive numbers of folks, for sure. You know, it was really, as it grew and came to a peak in 2011 and 12, what we did is we established a personal use fishery fund, and the fund was established to help to buffer for some of the volatility that you naturally see in fish runs, and that one year you might have a great run and a lot of participation, and because of the fees that we charge for parking and for camping and for launching of boats, we would generate enough revenue in those years to support the fishery and provide the services that we provide. However, in years when the runs were down, that fund would allow for a buffer that, so we could pull from that fund to offset revenues that were lower than what we had expected. What we've seen over the last 2 years, really 3 years, is the revenues have begun to decrease to the point where we've been having to subsidize out of that fund consistently, and we're concerned now that if things continue, that fund will be depleted, and at that point we'd have to start subsidizing the fishery out of our general fund, which is why we're so supportive of this DipNet permit fee. We feel that this will give us enough revenue to make sure that we aren't having to subsidize the fishery. Just for example, in FY 2019, we actually operated the fishery at a net loss of $95,000. And then in last year, despite the fact that we actually reduced our expenditures by $56,000, we still operated the fishery at a net loss of almost $3,000. And last year, we had great fish counts, great participation generally, but for whatever reason, we've been seeing folks either going to the Kasilof or accessing the river from different locations. We still didn't receive the revenues that we thought that we would. So again, we're very supportive of this bill. We think that it's frankly long overdue that the users participate by contributing a small fee when they get their permit. And then the one other thing from the state perspective, Senator Machicki talked about, you know, with UCI, that it's really Kasilof and Kenai. You know, it's a very small amount of dip netting that occurs at Fish Creek as well. But at the Kasilof fishery, it's my understanding that area is managed by the Division of Mining, Land, and Water, who is not allowed to charge fees. And I think their annual budget to support that now is somewhere between $50,000 and $60,000. And with just a $5 fee here, based on the methodology that we use for allocation, that would generate over $40,000 a year to the state to support that Kasilof fishery. And that was the last thing I'd like to mention is in the bill itself, I'd like to suggest a small amendment to the methodology that's listed here on how the allocation would occur. I can address that later if necessary. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Ostrander. Questions for Mr. Ostrander? Yes. Senator Kawasaki.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Mr. Ostrander, for being online. Can you go through the types of fees that you have currently in place for the municipality for people who fish in the, I guess it's the Kenai dip net fishery?
Yeah, sure. Through the chair, Senator Kawasaki. So we've got three different areas that participants can access the fishery. We've got South Beach and North Beach, which are fisheries that folks actually fish, you know, wading into the water on the beach. And there we provide opportunities for camping. So we charge for camping, we charge for parking, and we also have a third fee, which is a drop-off fee. So if someone just comes down and drops someone off, they have to pay a fee for that as well. The third point of access is at our city dock where we have a boat launch. We actually have four ramps that provide that people are allowed to use to launch their boats. So there we provide or we charge fees for launching and parking of their vehicles.
Senator?
Yep. Thank you. Mr. Ostrander, I guess have you increased the rates locally for those camping, parking, drop-off fees, and launch fees? in the recent future to try and make up for the deficit that you've incurred, or the deficit that's incurred during the fishing season?
Through the chair, Senator Kawasaki, we have not increased fees since 2015, and the reason we haven't is we're concerned that, well, first of all, when we last increased fees, there was a lot of folks that were upset about the level of our fees, and our fees are above like what the state charges at their boat launches now, and we're concerned that if we increased fees, that one, folks wouldn't be very happy with us, and two, we potentially could see people look to access the fishery again from other locations. So we made a conscious decision not to raise fees since 2015. I think we might see diminishing returns if we jacked up our fees more again, because I think that they are already higher than what folks can access in other areas, and I think we get a lot of pushback there.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Rebeck.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. So I'm very fond of the fishery on the Kenai River and have frequented it over the years. And I will say to Senator Kawasaki's question, I've been both in a boat and on the shore, and it is pretty expensive in a boat, and it seems that most of the cleanup occurs on the banks with the fish, and so maybe a little bit more appropriate to spread out the user fees, my opinion.
Thank you, Senator Rebeck. The fish that you're cleaning up are from both the vessels and the folks on the beach. They just drift down and stay at the tide line. But as the city of Kenai has increased the fees locally, folks have found other ways to get there. So a lot of the folks that are coming from upriver are not participating in the city's maintenance. They're, you know, how we can all get creative when we find a less expensive way to do things. And also more and more people are going to the Kasiloff, even though they are smaller fish. It's much lower cost, and that is an impact on the state, as well as the fact that the facilities just aren't there. So it's just trying to find a low-cost way to sort of spread that out fairly. Any other questions for the city manager? Okay. Thank you, Mr. Ostrander. I appreciate your testimony. We are going to set this bill aside. Again, we wanted to introduce it. We will get to you before we hear it again. We'll get you the copy in advance. And please, if you have any ideas, let us know about your interest in this bill as well. With that, and having no other business before us, and I'm also keeping public testimony open on that bill, I want to thank our LAO moderator, Brett Mello, and Chris Dickrell with Senate Records, and my staff, Conrad Jackson, for your work here today. With no business, further business to come before the committee, this meeting is adjourned at 4:24 p.m.